Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the MCRIT Podcast. Today we're going to discuss arterial lines, a topic I've been meaning to talk about for a long, long time, so we will finally hit it. Before that, big announcement. Folks have been emailing asking, what's the deal? Are we doing the MCRIT conference this year? We've been doing it in New York up until now for like 10 years running. And what's the date? What's going on? And to be honest with you, I was thinking about not doing it this year. It just had become a logistical nightmare. I was pretty much a one-man show. Got some help in the past couple of years. It still wasn't enough. And the conference never really was exactly what I wanted just because of all those logistical limitations. And as I was thinking about giving it up, I actually was talking to Swami, Anand Swaminathan, and he's like, hey, jackass, why don't you just partner up with someone who actually does this regularly and has an entire crew and can make this happen? And he was absolutely right. So, big announcement. The MCRIT conference is now the Essentials of EM Crit. That's right. I have partnered with the Essentials of EM folks, Paul Jun, Aaron Bright, and their entire crew that makes Essentials of EM one of the best produced conferences in emergency medicine. I am partnering with these folks, and it is going to be, it's just going to be amazing. There's no way it could be anything else, because we're taking all the goodness that we've established over the past decade doing this, and now bringing all the amazing power, ideas, productions from the Essential VM folks and combining it. It can't help but be amazing. It is a one-day conference. It is January 31st, 2018. It is in New York City. We're sticking with the Sinai venue we've always been. Speakers who are lined up so far: Chris Hicks from Canada. Also from Canada, Sarah Gray, ED intensivist. Tom DeLore, hematologist that actually knows how to take care of sick patients, and many more speakers talking about the stuff you love. We're going crazy on the format this year. Instead of just lectures, we're going to have live podcast interviews. Okay, I've sold it enough. Now, here's the wacky part, and I don't know why they're doing this, but they are already pricing this conference crazy cheap, but they said I could give any MCRIT listener $100 off the already, what I think is too low, charge for this conference. That's right. If you sign up soon, $100 off. That is 25% off the ticket price. This offer won't be available forever, so if you want to take advantage, now is the time. The promo code is MCRIT. Doesn't matter, case sensitive or not. I don't know how they figured that out. I can't. But just write MCRIT, and you will get a lot off the ticket price. If you want tickets, and you should get them soon because they're going to sell out very quickly, go to mcritconference.com. That is mcritconference.com. You'll find the registration links. Make sure to use the code MCRIT to save the $100. Get your tickets early. Now, we had traditionally offered this free for New York City residents. Can't do that this year. It's just not possible. It was already really tough in previous years. But if you are a New York City resident, we have set aside tickets at an insanely low price, like so low that the money is solely there to force people to stick around the whole day. They usually defect in the afternoon. So if you are a New York City resident, there is a limited number of tickets at an incredibly low price. Go to mcritconference.com to find the information. Now, you might be saying, I'm not going to be in New York City in January, so I don't care about this. Well, because we're partnered with Essentials of EM, we can now live stream this, which is what we're going to do. And so you could watch this anywhere in the world. So if you're interested in the live stream, go to mcritconference.com. There is also a savings for that using the code MCRIT. Okay, let's get to the show. Let's get started with arterial lines. I guess the best way to break this up is by location first, and then we could go into some extra stuff. And so then that brings up the conversation of how do you choose the location for your arterial line? And for the most part, if the patient is critically ill, but they're not crashing, they're not on insane levels of vasopressors, they're not actively exsanguinating to the point where I think they could code, then here's the order I choose. Radial is my first choice, then femoral, then axillary, then brachial, then dorsalis pedis, and we'll discuss each of those in turn. Now, why do I put the proviso there about the not on crazy vasopressors or actively dying from exsanguination? It's my contention, and it's the contention of people far smarter than me, that there is a difference between peripheral and central arterial line values. And those differences are manifest when there is profound vasoconstriction, like a patient on insane doses of vasopressors, or a patient whose body is like, we're going to exsanguinate in the next like 50 seconds, so clamp down as much as you can. And for those patients, I've noticed a difference anecdotally. There's some hints of this in the literature on post-bypass cases and stuff like that. And folks like Philippe Rolla have mentioned this as well. I have found radial A-lines to be inaccurate in those patients, and I will always go straight to a central arterial line, which for me almost always means a femoral arterial line. But let's start off with the, you know, you just started a patient on norepi, they're on 5 micrograms, their MAP is 70. They're not, you know, insanely vasoconstricted. In fact, they're vasodilated, and you're just giving just enough pressure to get them tipped over to a MAP you find acceptable. So we will start with the radial art line. I like this because it's quick in most circumstances. It could be done easily, and it's safe. Even if the patient had a bleeding dyscrasia, you can hold direct pressure and stop this, and you're not going to have large amounts of blood loss. You might have a hematoma, but radial art line is nice. I would argue definitively before the advent of ultrasound, but even with it, that this is one of the hardest procedures in emergency medicine and critical care to do well and consistently. This requires a lot of technique, far more technique than a femoral arterial line, which is basically just a central line. The radial art line takes some skill and talent, and when they're easy, anyone could do it, but the hard ones, the ones that require troubleshooting, well, they have a skill curve that rewards having done many, many, many radial art lines. I think the way I'll break all these up is to first discuss sterility and then discuss technique. So the sterility of the radial art line, a contentious topic. Everyone has their own opinion. In the operating rooms, they're probably done with exam gloves and nothing else. A little bit of ChloraPrep and exam gloves, and that's for the ones where it's presumed they're going to be in just for the duration of the operative case. When they're going to be in for days and days in an intensive care unit, I think you have to give a little bit more thought to the sterility level. But I've looked through the literature in preparation for this episode and just in general to inform my clinical practice, and I don't see any compelling data that says you have to do this quote-unquote full sterile, meaning, you know, gown, full body drapes on the patient, etc. I have seen people for ICU lines that will actually be used for days in an intensive care unit, just putting them in with exam gloves, and that just strikes me wrong as well. Almost all of the studies that said there is no increased infection risk from not using full sterile were all in comparison to using sterile gloves, a mask, and good prep. And so that's basically what I do. Now, there's two ways that I do radial art lines at Janus General. There's the ones where I think it's going to be tough. So right from the outset, and this could be due to my palpating the artery or just, you know, having experience with other lines in the patient and their vessels are kind of difficult. But there's the ones where I will, at the get-go, get a table, put the patient's arm up on an IV bag so that their wrist is extended, and tape them down nicely, and put the ultrasound in the perfect location across the bed so that my line of sight could be on the patient's wrist and the ultrasound machine without having to turn my head, which is how you should do all procedures if you have the time to set it up. And I'll put on some towels, you know, surgical towels, so I'll have a little field, you know, I'll make a little square using 4 of those towels. You could do it with 2 as well if you know how to, like, fold the towels properly. So if you only have 2, you can make that work. I'll show you that if you really want me to at some point. And I'll still not bother putting on a gown. I'm still just going to use a mask and exam gloves. But, you know, I'll do the real prep. And then there's the quick and dirty, but in my mind, equally sterile technique of pulling the patient's arm a little bit off the bed, taping their thumb down to the side rail of the bed so that their wrist gets extended without having to put anything underneath it. I don't know if you can envision what I'm talking about. The patient's arm is now suspended in space, and since I've put a little bit of tape around their thumb and pulled that down, it actually holds their arm in place and extends their wrist. And now I have air surrounding me, and I'll just do a prep all the way, you know, like halfway up that lower arm and a little bit down onto the hand and thumb. And now, in my mind, it's the same sterile field, because either you're touching sterile or you're touching air. And if anyone asks, no, I drape everyone, because that's what the CDC says you need to do. The CDC's, that's the American Infectious Disease / Disease Society, demands drapes, mask, sterile gloves. That's what they ask for. And of course, therefore, at my real hospital's job, I do that every single time. But at the old hospital, at Janus General, I might have done that suspending the arm in the air technique. And to my mind, that has to be equally sterile. The real question of how far you want to go in sterility is what you're doing with the probe of the ultrasound. And we'll get there in a second, but I'd say most of the radial art lines I'm doing are with ultrasound. So are you putting on a full probe sheath? In which case, you probably want to have drapes or at least towels, because the probe sheath itself could touch non-sterile things and then be put into your sterile field. The probe itself actually makes the sterility more difficult. Or do you want to take a big Tegaderm and put it over the entirety of the probe face and handle, and now what you'll be grabbing is that sterile Tegaderm. And you don't need to put any gel underneath the Tegaderm. It could stick directly to the ultrasound probe face, and then you just need some sterile lube on top. And I'll leave it to you as to which you want to do, but I'll just put that Tegaderm technique out there as a way of being sterile and yet being able to perform this radial art line very quickly. Like, if you're willing to do the suspended in the air technique and putting a Tegaderm over the probe face, you will be able to get one of these done in like less than 60 seconds if you're good at it. All right, so those are the sterility issues on the radial art line. Let's talk about technique. First thing to talk about is what you're actually using as your radial art line kit or cannula, etc. Now, when I first learned this, we didn't have radial art line specialized devices. And in fact, in the ORs, they didn't have them either at the hospital that I was training at. And we would just use a 20-gauge angiocath. Now, if you learn how to do radial art lines with a 20-gauge angiocath, your skills will be mad, because that is much harder to do, but you get very good at it. And as a result of learning that way, I learned a very specific technique I still use for my radial art lines. And the original description of Seldinger technique actually had you puncturing deliberately the back wall of the vessel and then withdrawing until you're within the vessel lumen itself, which prevents the possibility, or at least sharply mitigates it, of the very tip of the needle being intravascular, and yet when you pass the wire, it going extravascular or into the actual interstitial, into the wall of whatever vessel you're in, which is much more possible with arterial vessels than venous vessels. You avoid that by doing the true Seldinger technique. And this is, I think, one of the best ways to get it done with an angiocath, which is at maybe a 30-degree angle, you hit vessel, you get flash, you puncture through the vessel, the flash stops. Now you drop your angle to almost completely parallel to the patient's skin, and then slowly withdraw until you get flash again. And this virtually guarantees that both the tip and the lumen of the needle will be intravascular, and therefore when you pass a wire, it's sure to go into the vessel and not into the wall or extravascular. This is how I do it regardless of which kit I'm using, and it really helped with the 20-gauge angiocaths. When we had these 20 gauges, eventually we got a thin wire available to us in a separate piece of packaging. That also made it easier, because then we were able to poke through the vessel, drop the angle, pull back, get a flash, put the wire in, and only at that point advance the cannula. That made it easier. And then eventually we got what I think most people are using, which are the Arrow radial art line kits. And if you've never seen one of those, it is a self-contained unit of a needle, a plastic-contained wire that is linked to the entire apparatus and a cannula over top of it. They're usually 20 gauge, and they make it a lot easier if you get good at them. Now, the weirdness is there's multiple versions of this, and some of them are excellent, and some of them suck, all from the same manufacturer. And for a while, we had these really crappy versions of them that we would fail almost routinely with, and then we got back the good ones. So if I remember, I won't be able to do it at the release of this episode, but if I remember, I will go back and put the actual pick of the radial art line kit we recommend. But I say kit, but it's just the catheter, needle, wire apparatus itself is one piece. There's nothing else in these kits. I've seen what's called the art kit, which actually has one of those and everything else you need. And those are very nice. I don't know what their costs are. I think it's by Centurion. But if those aren't expensive, those would be really nice to have because they have everything in them. Okay. Now, even these, you know, purpose-made ones, it's still a very tough technique, which means that if I feel a great pulse, great, and especially in the patients who are profoundly hypertensive, I might go for one shot without an ultrasound machine, but this is just pure laziness on my part because it has been shown definitively that the success rate with ultrasound across the board is going to be higher than without it, which doesn't mean you're not going to get many first pass hits without it. But if over the course of your career you looked at it and you did a RCT with yourself, you'd probably do much better overall with ultrasound because ultrasound lets you see what's going on. And so if I miss that one time, then I always just go get a machine. And I'm doing it in transverse, though longitudinal, if you could get everything in line on the ultrasound image, is probably the better way to go. Now, why do I say that? It's funny, but I've had not infrequently the circumstance where I feel the pop, and you get if you get do this long enough, you actually will start feeling the pop when you're in the vessel lumen, and there's no flash. And at times, before I realized this phenomenon, I would continue, you know, to advance. I'd continue to try to find it. I couldn't find it. I don't understand. Oh, look, the needle's now through the vessel. I still haven't gotten a flash. What's going on here? It looked like everything was in line. I've had this happen frequently enough that when I see the tip on ultrasound of my needle intravascularly, I looked at it either in transverse and I, you know, see it in the middle, I advance forward, it disappears, I pull back, it's right there in the middle of the lumen. No flash at all, no blood has even touched this radial art catheter. And I'm like, I'm in. So I advance the wire and put in the cannula and I get perfect flash. And there was no actual flash in the needle itself. And I don't know what to explain this by. Is it vasospasm? Maybe, but I don't think so, because as soon as the cannula goes in, there's perfect flow. There's a perfect arterial waveform. And this has happened enough that I think this is a phenomenon. I don't know how to explain it. It's a little piece of something getting caught in my needle, a little skin plug, maybe. Maybe that's why we have internal dilators for doing things like LP. But this has happened enough that on ultrasound, if I see that I'm in, I will try to advance the wire and the cannula. And I've had many work that way. So be aware of this. Now, the other thing you'll see with these radial art devices is the second there's any blood in them at all, many times they won't flash. That blood itself, I don't know if it's clotted or just the blood fluid dynamics, whatever. As soon as there's blood in there, you're not going to get repeat flash, even if there's still room in the flash chamber. So just be aware of that. If you want to keep using the same device after you've gotten some blood in it, then you have to really go to longitudinal, or if the vessel lumen's wide enough, actually walk it down and transverse and see the needle tip in the middle. You're not going to have that feedback from flash. Okay. How to save? Well, I guess I should describe how you fail and then talk about how to save. Many times you will have the situation where you got good flash, you advance the wire, and when you get good enough, you realize this wire did not feel great as I advance it. Sometimes it just, you push it, it goes super easy. Sometimes it's impossibly hard, and those all are crap. If it's really hard to advance that wire, don't keep trying. It's not in the right place. But sometimes it's just a little bit harder than normal. And you're like, oh, well, maybe the vessel's like a little bit, you know, calcified, and that's why. And you try to convince yourself it's going to be okay. And then you take out, you know, the whole apparatus, just leaving the cannula there, and there's no flash out of the cannula. Okay, how do you save this? Here's how I save it. I've already now advanced the wire completely out of this one-piece device. So it's already there. I don't pull it back. Leave it out. And what I will do is just slowly pull back on that cannula. And many times, since what usually has happened is the wire is poked through the back wall of the vessel, and therefore the cannula is through the back wall of the vessel, that as you slowly pull that cannula out, it will eventually have the tip become intraluminal. And at that point, when there's like, you know, blood pulsating out into your face, not into your face, hopefully, but, you know, right at you, you will put the entire apparatus back with the wire sticking out, such that the wire will now be pushed through the cannula, and then you can advance the cannula. And many times I have saved art lines that way without a problem. Now, for me, I have an internal rule. I will try that twice. So, you know, I failed the first time actually inserting it the normal way. I'll pull back until I get flash, insert the wire, advance the cannula all the way again. Oh, still no flash. I must have poked the wire back through the back vessel. I will try one more time. You get three at this, in my mind. I mean, you could try 10 times if you want, but I think there's diminishing returns and the hematoma gets bad, so I don't do that. I just do three. And now I'll pull back the cannula again until I get flash. And this time, maybe I'll pull back, you know, 1 millimeter more, hoping that this time, when I redirect a wire through it, it won't go through the back wall of the vessel. And there you go. Now, I will say sometimes I don't do that true cylinder technique where I backwall the vessel, but I will still, if I'm not going to backwall it, if I got flash and now I'm going to say, oh, this looks pretty good, I'm just going to advance, I usually will drop the angle still and advance one more millimeter before threading the wire. Okay, the Allen test is the last thing to talk about on the radial art line side. For those at the beginning of your career, you don't know what the Allen test is. It's kind of a historical remnant, I think, or at least in most places I've been. The Allen test is a test of the patency of the collateral circulation through the ulnar artery. And the idea is you find the radial artery pulse on the patient, you put your fingers there, and then you have them squeeze their hand into a tight fist. And then you compress the radial artery hard, such that the idea is that you're going to stop blood flow through the radial artery, and then have them open their hand. If their hand pinks up very quickly, then you know their hand is still being supplied by the ulnar artery, even if the radial artery was taken out entirely. And therefore now, in your mind, it is safe to proceed with the radial art cannulation with the idea that if it ever thrombosed, they'd still be okay. They wouldn't lose their hand. This test in numerous studies has been shown to be unreliable, as to be not predictive of these vascular complications. And everywhere I've been, they've stopped doing it. There probably are better tests to do, like actually dopplering the arterial branch to the thumb, which is what they do many times for when they're going to think about harvesting the radial artery for various cardiovascular procedures. But I don't know, everywhere I've been in my own practice is, I don't do any of these. I just cannulate the radial artery. Now, anytime anyone has an art line in of any sort, they should be getting neurovascular checks by the nurses taking care of the patients in the ICU. And when they do those checks of the hand or the leg, depending on the location, they should be just checking for, you know, a hand that is not white. And this is how it's been done in most of the places. I'm curious, is anyone still doing the Allen test? If you are, put in the show notes. Now, wow, this went way longer on this first part than I thought it would, and I don't want to give you guys a 40-minute episode. I think what we'll do is we'll stop here. This will be Arterial Lines, part one. I'm not going to make you wait 2 weeks for part two. I will put it out later this week. So that's what we will do. We will put Arterial Lines Part 1 up today and Arterial Lines Part 2 up in the next few days. In the meantime, tell me your thoughts and questions on the radial art side of this. I'm super curious to hear what you think. Remember, go to mcritconference.com and get tickets. They're going to sell out quickly. We have a small auditorium and a lot of people that have expressed interest. So mcritconference.com. Remember, you're saving a lot of money if you sign up soon. Scott Weingart for the MCRIT Podcast saying bye-bye.